Friday night. Sam Rejofsky here. Sam Nation live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Your truth teller. Your Orange County sage. Your voice of freedom who tells it like it is. 800-222-5222 if you'd like to be on the program. Tonight, Sam at SamNation.com is my email. I'm still fighting this damn cold. And I've had it. Well, I've had it a long time. I'm ready to move on. And unfortunately, it is not. Last night, I came home. I was pretty tired, and I said, "This is it. I gotta clear out my my sinus passages." So I decided to take some Mucinex. You know that the stuff that's supposed to break everything up, open you up. And evict those nasty little, the commercials, evict those nasty little mucus jerks out of your body. Anyway, I take it, and I take the nighttime stuff, and I never take cold medication. You got to know this about me. I'm, with the exception of wine and whiskey, I lead a drug-free life. So I take this Mucinex stuff. Mind you, I had a glass of wine before this. So wine and Mucinex, let me tell you what happens. I was horizontal before I knew it. I was out on my back and I was out cold. Now, all this I'm telling you because, one, to explain why I still sound a little bit off, but two, to tell you that when I woke up this morning, Sherry told me that the puppies, we have our two little dachshund long-haired puppies, Rudy and Bella, were in bed and began chewing on my nose and my ears. And I had no idea. I don't know if that qualifies as a hashtag Me Too moment, but I felt violated. I did. So at any rate, the dogs had their way with me, and no marks. I'm not calling Sweet James. They didn't. I did. My nose was a little sore, like a little, I don't know, like raw. Is that the word? But they're just being playful. We're teaching them, no bite. You got to do that with puppies, but they want to bite everything. They're teething and all that good stuff. Well, at any rate, that is my personal update. Now, let's get into it. What a week, my friends. What a week this has been. We'll start with the 40,000 foot view, the cruising altitude high above the problem view of this entire book that's come out, this tell-all book on Trump. And here's the lesson. In Washington, if you actually believe, as I do, that Washington is, well, Trump calls it a swamp, but it's really a cesspool of a lot of people that are, above all else, self-interested, then the longer that these people are in that environment and are doing what they're doing, they're acting in their own self-interest primarily. And one advantage that career politicians like Clinton's, like the Bushes, like Obama have is that they have people that are with them for long periods of time who have served them and who have been in that world with them in the trenches. I'll give you an example. For example, a governor like George Bush W., when he came to the White House, a lot of his political operatives had been with him for years. And I've told you all of this before. This is a very important thing. You have people that have proven their loyalty and are there and are in the trenches with you for a number of years and come to the White House. And for the most part, those people are a lot more reliable than newbies. With Trump, these weren't just newbies. You have to understand. It wasn't just a problem that Trump didn't have his past governorship or a past 6 years plus in the Senate. The problem was not that Trump had to come into town and hire a bunch of political operatives that had no previous loyalty or even experience with the president. The problem is that Trump went to the establishment that hated him and hired a bunch of goofballs that all went into this with preconceived notions about who he is or who he was at the time. You know this rings true. This is, come on, who do you think Reince Priebus, you think that he came into this as chief of staff and that he was suddenly, just miraculously, 100% behind Make America Great Again? You think that's what happened? I don't. He leaked. And more importantly, this isn't about Reince Priebus. This is about all the little hangers-on of his that he brought over from the RNC. And I know these people, and I cannot use the language on air that would best describe some of these types. I know some of them. I promise you, these people are... No, I'm not naming any names. But when I talk... I've had conversations with some of these operatives... Some of these Republican Party movers and shakers, they aren't conservatives. They have no, they're not ideologues in any way. They're power-hungry little beezies is what they are. And I don't trust them. I wouldn't trust them with, you know, with getting my lunch if I were Trump, let alone of having my back when talking to a moronic reporter that ought to be reporting for the National Enquirer. Of course. Now you'll hear, and I've got a clip. The author here of this book. If you've missed what's been going on, you have this guy named Michael Wolff, and Michael Wolff has written a book, "Fire and the Fury Inside the Trump White House." Claims he was given unprecedented access, hours and hours and hours of meeting with people and talking to people. And today he gave an interview. I believe it was Savannah Guthrie. Is that who the interview was with on the Today Show? Excuse me. And this interview actually does not a whole lot to establish further his credibility on the book. But I bring it up because. Well, you got to understand how people come to speak to somebody when they're around. The premise here, and if we take him at his word, is that he was invited into the front door. There are other versions of this. I've heard, for example, that he did a lot of his interviews across the street at a prominent hotel in Washington, D.C., where he held court and had people, you know, trot across Pennsylvania Avenue, you know, leave the West Wing and go and talk to him off site. But at any rate, if people spoke to him and he was doing a tell-all book and writing an article or whatever it was, whatever pretenses he said, lending an ear to those interested in talking about their experiences inside the White House, let me ask you from your personal experience, when you all have jobs, you have, you know, working, you know, volunteering your kid's school, whatever it is that you do, you have been around humans. You understand human beings. So if I show up somewhere, if I show up at your office and I say, I'd love to talk to you guys. Anybody here want to talk to me about what's going on in here? You know, I want to hear about the boss. He seems like a great guy. Who do you think takes time away from their job to tell you what they think about the boss? Every single one of the losers in the office that don't like the boss. And every organization, I don't care how great the boss is, every organization has people. I'll give the example. Even when the boss is a phenomenal person, the boss, she is amazing. See what I did there? She's fantastic. You put out the call. Tell me about the boss. The people that show up to tell you about the boss are all the disgruntled a-holes. That's who shows up to tell you about the boss. So when you have, when you have these people, let me use his words, not mine. Michael Wolff today made big headlines with this interview on the Today Show. because he's went out and says 100% of the people think that Trump is unfit. 100% of the people that I spoke to say Trump is unfit. Here's the exchange with Savannah Guthrie earlier today on the Today Show.
According to your reporting, everyone around the president, senior advisors, family members, every single one of them questions his intelligence and fitness for office.
Let me put a marker in the sand here. 100% of the people around him.
Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, Ivanka Trump, question his fitness for office.
Every time I want to be careful about who I spoke to, because the nature of this kind of book is you kind of grant everyone a veil. But having said that, certainly Jared and Ivanka in their current situation, which is in a deep legal quagmire, are putting everything on the president.
One observation here, too, that needs to be said. And as you listen to this guy answer questions about his book, generally speaking, yes or no are good answers. The minute you begin to qualify any of your answers and you start to use a lot of words, this is when people are lying. I know this. Every time you do a deposition as a lawyer, I can tell you that somebody doesn't answer your question, they begin to use a lot of words, they're trying to mislead you. 100% of the people. And by the way, okay, you don't like Trump. I'm just saying, suppose you're out there, you're in Santa Monica, you're an anti-Trumpist. Do you really think that Ivanka is going on the record, talking to a reporter, granted a veil, to talk crap about her dad behind her dad's back? Do you think Ivanka is saying that her dad is unfit because she's frustrated that she's in some legal quagmire? This is accepting premises that aren't even true. This is such a load of garbage. My gosh. And, you know, everybody is distancing themselves away from this. You heard in the book, the author, Michael Wolff, asserts that Anna Wintour, now you know who she is, right? She's the editor of Vogue, editor-in-chief of Vogue magazine. Meryl Streep played an Anna Wintour-type character in A Devil Wears Prada, if you remember that movie. Well, anyway, Anna Wintour, if you know her, but politically, she's an absolute devoted Democrat. I mean, she was a big Hillary Clinton booster, big Obama booster. I mean, she and the Democratic Party are one. Well, he has it in the book that she went to Trump Tower after the election and begged Trump to become ambassador to England, to Great Britain. And today Anna Wintour is flatly denied. She was on the record. She's like, this did not happen. No way, no how, did not happen. And when I was when we were talking on Wednesday, I remember I mentioned that there have been a number of prominent publications and several of them left wing that have gone through this guy's work and found enormous discrepancies that he actually, this author Wolf, and I have to again say no relation to our own John Wolf. John Wolf is very accurate. Michael Wolf, less so. But that he uses experiences sort of soaking up certain feelings to paint pictures of what people are like. But you can't do that when you're using actual names. You can't create a caricature of Trump when you're talking about Trump. A real journalist wants to figure the guy out. But Wolf falls into the same trap that every person in the mainstream media, that all these journalists, even serious ones, purportedly serious, do. And the trap, it's the same trap. They have no real interest. There's no genuine interest to actually figure out this guy. And it's so damaging because there's no real interest to figure out why he won. They want to believe the lie that it was the Russians or that it was, I don't know, a lightning strike from God or whatever. They just want to believe that it was happen chance. And it's not. It happened because of Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama, BCBO. We're over it. A significant portion of the country that the media has no idea exists are over BCBO. They're done with it. It's history. Because Republican, Democrat, Republican, Democrat, didn't matter. The same BS policies were in place. And year over year, regulations went up, taxes went up, life got harder, job opportunities in the inner cities went down, and people decided to take a chance on Trump. And the only question that you ought to be asking yourself if you want him out of office is, on the ground, is life going to be better 3 years from now when people go to the polls than it was 4 years prior? Is 2016, are 2016 and 2020 going to be significantly different? If the answer is people are doing better, then all of this is meaningless horse crap. More on this when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Plus Trump's new nickname for Steve Bannon. There's a brilliance behind it. I'm telling you. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
News, talk, evolve, 790 KBC.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KABC. I'll tell you one interesting thing the other day when this explosive story broke on Michael Wolff's book on Trump. The immediate reaction of the White House and of the president was to slam Bannon, which to me means that to some extent they believe that what, at least in some form, what was written in the book is a truthful representation of what Bannon said. Now, that, of course, prompted in turn today. Trump tweeted out that he called Bannon Sloppy Steve. So now Bannon has joined the proud ranks of low energy Jeb, Lion Ted Cruz, Senator Flaky, right? Oh, Little Marco, right? And don't forget Little Rocket Man, Kim Jong-un. Well, for some people out there, this Twitter stuff is further proof that Trump is losing it. He's got his mind is gone, and he's just an irritated child sitting with a smartphone tweeting away. Let me tell you something. It's interesting. Dilbert creator Scott Adams, he wrote a book called Win Bigly, Persuasion in a World Where Facts Don't Matter. He's his background, interestingly enough, he's a trained hypnotist, and he has studied the art of persuasion, persuasion techniques. There's a science behind it. And he was, like me, one of the early people out there saying Trump's going to win. This is not really a contest the way that the media is portraying it. And this was and based on observing Trump using precisely these type of monikers to put his opponents on the mat, figuratively speaking. So one of the things that he said, the first one that really resonated with him was low energy Jeb. And here, listen to him in an interview explaining exactly what he means.
I call these linguistic kill shots. It's not just an insult. It's not just a clever nickname. And we saw Clinton try to come up with clever nicknames that had no purchase whatsoever, like Dangerous Donald. You know, it just didn't work. But look at low energy Jeb. So before I ever heard low energy Jeb, I had a good impression of Jeb Bush. He looked like he was an in control, calm, reasonable, exactly the person you'd want if the nuclear question came up, if there was some big decision. Jeb Bush isn't going to get excited about
it. He seemed like a competent CEO.
Competent CEO, exactly. And as soon as Trump said low energy, could you see him any other way?
It's funny because it's true. And it's this type of thing right now that is more effective, honestly, than any lawyer letters, cease and desist letters, and any of that nonsense. In other words, the tweet is exactly what Trump ought to be doing. Because what the tweet does, now Sloppy Steve is in our vocabulary. It's in our lexicon. It's in our brains. And anything that Sloppy Steve says, by implication, is sloppy, is imprecise, is untrue. See what we did there? What isn't good, in my opinion, is sending a cease and desist letter, because that's the kind of thing that draws everybody's eyeballs to, wow, they're really pulling out all the stops to get this book not into my hands. And so, boy, I better read it. God, there's got to be some really good stuff in there. So that actually has the opposite effect. In other words, Trump doesn't nail it right every single time. But these little nicknames, you might if you hate him, I get it. You think it's childish. You think it's horse crap. It's not. It's devastatingly effective. And he has a unique talent and ability to communicate in a way that is almost always spot on. And so in that sense, you're trying to tell me here, Michael Wolff, that everybody thinks that he's 100% of people around him think he's unfit. He's mentally unfit, that he's lost it. Anyway, I'll play that clip when we come back. See, it's just nonsense. It does not make any sense. Does not compute. All right. Our own John Wolff, of no relation to Michael Wolff, our credible and tireless reporter, up next with the news. And we'll be back right after this.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790. KABC.
Friends, welcome. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC, the voice of reason, the king of common sense. And here we are live Friday night, 737, 1-800-222-5222. Sam@samnation.com is the email. Now, the political component of this Michael Wolff story is important. Because when I have to say this one more time, if he says that 100% of the people that came to him and talked to him about Trump and how horrible he is and how he acts like a child and how mentally unfit he is, and X, Y, and Z, if 100% of those people are self-selected, and they are the malcontents. And I promise you, from the real world, every one of you know that this is true. You may want to believe this nonsense, and this is, by the way, why it will sell. Michael Wolff is a businessman. He's a businessman first and a journalist, a writer, you know, third and fourth, fifth. He's a wealthy guy, lives in the Upper East Side. He has, in New York, that's Manhattan, for those of you not in the know. But he's a guy who's always had keen business acumen. So a lot of his stories, if you look at his career, he's been very industrious and understands he correctly understood the type of book that would sell in this environment. Let me tell what book is going to fly off the shelves right now. Is it the book that tells 40% of us that we're correct and that Trump's a great guy? Is that the one that's going to sell? No, that's not the book that's going to sell. It's the one that Chelsea Handler sees is coming out and goes, exactly what I've been saying all this time. Yes, it's exactly right. The one liberals, I'll tell you something. I understand liberals like the back of my hand. I'm looking at the back of my hand right now. And I know every crevice. I know every wrinkle. I know every hair. Liberals need to be constantly reaffirmed in their beliefs. And it has 100% to do with feels and feelings and very little to do with fact. As conservatives, we look at facts. And the thing that doesn't add, I'm trying to understand how a person who is a child, how a person who is a total nincompoop, a total loser, has done so much winning, to borrow his phrase. I want to understand how somebody who is who's in constant in temper tantrums, who's in bed at 6:30 eating cheeseburgers, okay, who everyone around him thinks is a joke, was able to muster the greatest political upset of my lifetime. I also am keenly interested to know how he built a multi-billion dollar empire. All of these things, they don't add up. This is the same idea of global warming causing sub-zero, you know, Arctic conditions in the heart of New York. At some point, you don't have to be a scientist to say, what's going on here? I'm getting a little far ahead of myself. So anyway, the point here is it just doesn't add up. It doesn't make any sense. You have to look at some point. You've just got to examine even what you know, even what you can see from a distance against what is being sold. And I'm telling you, part the commercial aspect of this is a huge factor of this book coming out. This book is going to be wildly successful. The author will become very wealthy. No, any kind of defamation lawsuit against him, against the publisher, is not going to succeed. Defamation law gives a wide berth to people writing about public figures. I mean, if you're a public figure, you have very little protections when it comes to any kind of defamation suit. So the president, you could almost virtually make stuff up about a president, any politician. You're going to be fine. So they're going to make a ton of money here. But that does not mean that any of it is true. And in fact, in my opinion, I think they're going to make a lot of money because it's not true. It's very deliberate. These things have been certainly embellished to make it more sensational. So this really is a tabloid hit piece and nothing more. All right. Don't go anywhere. Got more here in my stack of stuff. Sam Rjasi, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rjasi here for my friend, my attorney, Sweet James Bergner. Who do you go with if you've been in a car accident, motorcycle accident, boat accident, any kind of accident where you've been hurt? Do you go with the guy that your brother-in-law knows that, you know, did a case once? Or do you go with the guy that's won over $400 million for his clients, who's fought so many battles to successful conclusion, made so many people happy? Well, I think it's a simple answer. Sweet James is the guy for you. Bergner, that's the man. 800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. Keep that number, let me try that again. Keep that number handy, okay? Put it in your hip pocket. Keep it close at hand because you never know when you might need it. All consultations, listen to me, it's free, okay? You don't pay anything. In fact, you don't pay a dollar, and not a zip, until your case is done and over. All right. Again, the phone number, 1-800-881-2021. Call James. Him and his team are standing by, ready to help. Oh, and he's got a website, too, sweetjames.com. All right. Sam Rjasi here, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Oh, man alive. You saw there's more sex harassment claims coming out. Oh, yeah. No, this, by the way, and I want to illustrate something to you of why I have been so skeptical of this Me Too movement. This execution by accusation. So, Paul Haggis, you know, he's a very famous director, Hollywood director, who just had a few women come out, it's the same thing, come out and accuse him of some pretty nasty stuff. He's denying it. And in and of itself, right, there's no story there, right? It's like, the next... Only this one has a little interesting wrinkle, which is why I'm sharing it with you. Haggis has come out denying the claims and saying that the Church of Scientology is behind them. Now, you'll know, Yeah, the Church of Scientology does not like it when people criticize them. And they engage in some pretty bad tactics when it comes to fighting their opponents. And Paul Haggis is a former member. He was an ex-Scientologist who had left the church. He got declared a suppressive person, which is an enemy of the Church of Scientology. No one's allowed to associate with him, right? Bad man. And I'm bringing this up because I don't know what happened. I don't know if he's right, if the Church of Scientology is behind it or not. But I'm giving you an example of a situation where women can have ulterior motives for making accusations. I'm giving you a situation that, at least to me, and I think to you as well, is entirely believable. You have three women that bam, 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 all come out and make similar accusations about a guy. And what's our whole Me Too ethical duty here? To believe the accusers? All women deserve to be believed. And and so there we are. And by the way, it's not just one. It's not just two. It's three. It's three women. They're all saying the same thing. And all Haggis is saying is like, no, I didn't do it. And by the way, I smell a rat. Totally believable. So it's just an illustrative example. It's a teachable moment of why we need to be a little more circumspect before we rush to judgment on who's guilty simply because somebody somewhere has said something. People say all sorts of things. My gosh. This ties into this whole story about this book. You know what this book really is? The book about Trump, the tell-all about Trump. It's just disloyalty of embittered employees and people with their own motives, their own agendas, running amok and thinking of themselves perhaps they're more important than they really are. And that is true. It doesn't matter if you're working in the West Wing or you're working at Del Taco, okay? The same people with the same griping, with the same sense of exaggerated self-importance exist everywhere, in every station, in every workplace, all across the world. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
News, talk, evolve. Talk Radio 790 KABC.
So we have the new nickname, right? We got a new nickname for Steve Bannon. This new nickname, Sloppy Steve, that's the new nickname, right? Trump put out today on Twitter. Michael Wolff, the author of the tell-all book, the author that has unmasked Steve Bannon as the source for so many things. By the way, so many horrible and certainly questionable statements about Trump. One of the interesting things is, you remember the previous clip where he's asked, 100% people around Trump thinks he's unfit. And one of his answers, Michael Wolff says, every time, and I want to be careful here about who I spoke to because of the nature of this kind of book, you kind of grant everyone a veil. Remember that? A veil, you know, is like a covering over a face, like you would if you were getting married. You've got if you're a woman, at least, you'd have a veil. Well, so anyway, it doesn't seem that he granted Steve Bannon that veil. Very interesting about that, right? He quotes a lot of very... He says that he granted everybody a veil, and then he goes on to say, well, Ivanka said this, and Jared said this, and Bannon said that. It's nonsense. Anyway, Michael Wolff talks about the transformation of Steve Bannon from loyal Trumpist to criticizer-in-chief. This is what he says.
I spoke to Steve, as I spoke to many people throughout the length of the reporting here, and really saw a transformation, not only of Steve, but of everyone. But Steve, in a way, is most vivid, or his language is is the most vivid.
And very
and the transformation was, you know, we thought this presidency was could work. We thought Donald Trump is an interesting, unique character, and we might be able to do something here. And they saw him over that time come to the conclusion he cannot do this job.
Now, this is fascinating because at the same exact time, there's a guy, Keith Cuffler. And Keith Cuffler is a biographer, a Bannon biographer, who's writing about the presidency, which is really the only interesting thing in Bannon's life, or was the only interesting thing in Bannon's life. So, of course, an important part of a book on Bannon is going to be his time in the White House. I kind of feel bad for Keith Cuffler because he really, the interest in Bannon, I think, is going to wane. So his life work here is not exactly going to fly off the shelves. But at any rate, this is a guy who's motivated, in my opinion, to fluff this thing up a little bit and to join the bandwagon to sell his book. But he does exactly the opposite, talking to on CNN with Chris Cuomo. Listen to this.
The notion that Bannon started off with Trump thinking, boy, this guy is unique and he seems to want to play ball. And then over time, he shifted and started to question his competence, Trump's competence to do the job. Do you buy that?
I don't know if I buy it or not. I can tell you that as I did the research for my book, I talked to Bannon for 10 hours in July and then in August, right after he left the White House. And I didn't sense any of that. Now, look, Steve Bannon is media savvy. He could have been spinning me. But he was full of praise for Trump at that point. And he would have to be a tremendous dissimulator to have been, you know, not on the level with me at all about that. So I did not sense any diminution in the esteem with which Bannon held Trump at that point in his conversations with me.
Fascinating stuff. It's a direct repudiation of what Michael Wolff said. Now, could both be true? Certainly. But it just points to the fact that the guy's unstable. I mean, if he's telling the truth to one guy and the other guy, as he sees it, it's totally different. All right. Now, I want to talk about some, I sense personally that this, all of this really, and as much as I've devoted time to it, all of this is sort of irrelevant in the grand scheme of what's going on politically. Because my sense is that there is a tide shifting very much in Trump's favor. Now, if you like Trump, this is great news. If you don't like Trump, it's terrible news. I think what we're seeing here in what we've seen here in the past few weeks and in the coming months will really be paved toward a second Trump term. And so I want to tell you about that. There's some very specific mile markers that I want to touch on right after the news with John Wolff. Don't go anywhere. Talk to you in a few minutes.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Oh, TGIF, it's Friday night, 8 o'clock, well, 8:04, whatever. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KABC, your friend in this age of Trump. I actually do think that this program is a place where you can get some, I think, real insight into what is going on. Because I know it, fascinating things. I go to CNN and I watch MSNBC and I read the Washington Post, and they just have it wrong. They have it all wrong. A very interesting little bit of news today, buried the third page of CNN.com, is a story about a Republican representative in the House, Chris Stewart. Now, Chris Stewart is a member of the House Intelligence Committee. And he's a conservative guy, but he's got a committee membership. This basically, in political terms, means that he has some favor with House leadership. Okay, you don't sit on a committee unless you've got some ranking and you have. You have some, I don't know, clout with the establishment. Well, Chris Stewart today is in the news because he has joined a couple other conservatives in Congress calling for Jeff Sessions to step down. The other two conservative Republicans that have gone on the record to ask for Sessions' removal are Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan. Now, Mark Meadows, you'll know him. He's the Freedom Chair, Freedom Caucus Chair. Jim Jordan sits also on the Oversight and Judiciary Committees. This is all fascinating to me because probably about 6 months ago, when all of this nonsense was breaking with Trump Russia, and you remember Jeff Sessions, you know, did the above board correct thing and recused himself from the investigation, turning it over to Rod Rosenstein, remember, acting attorney general, then came in and issued the now infamous memorandum appointing Robert Mueller as special counsel. And the entire tenor there, from everyone from Mitch McConnell to Paul Ryan to all the grandees of the Republican Party, was, Trump, don't you dare think about removing Sessions to get rid of this probe. Don't you even think about it. We will not stand for this. And even very conservative members, you know, very pro-Trump members says, no, we're not. Yeah, he can if he wants to remove Sessions, fine. But we sure as hell are not going to confirm a new appointee to fill his spot. Now, I recognize that three is a small number out of the few hundred or so in the House. And we have none in the Senate calling for Sessions' head quite yet. But this is different. This is new. And I'll tell you why it's happening. It's happening because Republicans and many Democrats, honestly, the Democrats I talk to that are in Washington, recognize privately that this Trump-Russia probe is hogwash, that it's a sideshow, and that it's nonsense, and they are starting to distance themselves away from it. And they're realizing, the Republicans, and certainly the conservative Republicans, are realizing that Sessions' recusal here was a giant mistake, that turning over responsibility for this investigation to a, well, not to a politically motivated operative like Rod Rosenstein, who is not a conservative, who's not a Republican, who's just there sitting, you know, he's a leftover insider guy, and turning it over to him was a colossal error. And that what Bob Mueller's probe has done so far, I mean, look, I know, look, investigations take time. We're all told of this. When you listen to listen to Democrats out there talking about it, that's what we hear. Let's give Bob Mueller time. If Robert Mueller is a good man, if we just give him the time and give him the resources, we are going to get to the truth. What the Democrats want is, of course, not to get to the truth, but for the investigation to last as long as possible, to muddy the water as much as possible, to sow seeds of confusion, to sow seeds of doubt, and to implant in Republicans a fear of aligning with the president, because perhaps they believe that someday he's going to be let off, you know, in handcuffs. Doesn't quite work that way. But at any rate, this investigation in its early stages instills so much fear in congressional Republicans that they, publicly at least, were all for it. We're all fine with it. Let Bob Mueller's a good man. He's a professional. He's going to get to the bottom of this. And the reason for it is nobody wanted to stick their political neck out, because I think deep down inside, many of them thought that this probe was going to turn into something. Quite the opposite thing is happening. Instead, there are at least two open investigations, we find out, into Hillary Clinton. One into the Hillary Clinton Crime Family Foundation that was used to basically sell her office as Secretary of State. And the other is into the criminal investigation of her handling of the emails, because now they've found even more damaging information on Wiener's laptop. I am referring to Anthony Wiener, the ex-spouse of Huma Abedin, longtime Clinton helper. So you got that going on. You've got Republicans now going on the record saying, hey, you know what? Maybe what Sessions did was dumb. It wasn't necessary. And this investigation's out of control. And on top of all of this, you have a backdrop, by the way. This is the wind in the sails here is the economy. When Bill Clinton intimated that it's the economy, stupid. And one, look, the economy is a winning issue. It's starting to become really dumb to hear the mainstream media say that this economic rebound is Obama's effect, right? I don't even want, it's nonsense. Because Obama and Bush, career Republicans, career Democrats, they're all the same. They're just dumb. They don't get the economy. You cannot buy the government cannot buy its way out of a bad economy. It doesn't work that way. The only way to get out of a tailspin and an economic crisis is to get government out of the way. You have to have actually exactly the opposite happen. You have to have government spend less and pass that savings along to the real moneymakers out there, which are businesses and the individuals that spend money in that economy and drive that economy forward. This is what I'm telling. This is Bush didn't get it. Obama certainly didn't get it. And all the stimulus spending, but it's nonsense. It has nothing to do with the economic rebound. From the day that Trump was elected, it was the understanding was that he would fulfill his campaign promises. The hope was that he would fulfill his campaign promises. And as he does it, tax reform isn't really even the big thing, although it's very important. I read a report today. Apple is repatriating some $500 billion. Big deal. This is what Trump promised would happen is happening. Corporations that had money overseas in Ireland and other places with lower corporate rates, parking cash outside of the U.S. because of this insane almost 40% corporate tax that we have, are now bringing it back in. Good for our economy. Good for the government's coffers. Good for everybody around. But the other part of this conversation is the regulation. Well, Obama, by use of his executive authority, is stripping all these regulations that were put into place by Obama. Trump is stripping. Yep, getting ahead of myself. Thank you. Trump is stripping all of these regulations that were put in place by Obama. And because they weren't ever passed into law by Obama, Obama loathed Congress. This is an important reminder of history. Obama was always at odds with Congress, so he did everything he used his executive authority to further a lot of his agenda. Which means Trump can use his executive authority now, the same executive authority, to remove those regulations, to remove and undo much of what Obama did. I think when historians look back at this, by the way, it'll actually be one of the weaker moves on Obama's part that he did so little through Congress. And I want to talk a little bit later about the marijuana issue here, because there is some word that perhaps the Federalists are going to be coming into California, shutting down marijuana dispensaries. And this is part of the problem, too. You have a difference in executive action and law. But at any rate, Trump using executive authority to strip away regulations is opening up business. I'm telling you, business is unshackled right now. And they're feeling it. And everybody I talk to in the private sector, people are rejoicing. Even here, it's affecting us here in California. That in spite of all the nonsense our own state does, we still are rebounding. We are still picking it up. And we're picking it up because the federal regulations are slowly getting stripped away. And all of this, economies are psychological, too. If the perception is that you have a business-friendly government in place, all of a sudden business gets a little more excited about doing business. And that optimism begins to create actual, you know, tangible benefits. You see, we saw today the black unemployment rate at an all-time low. This is terrible news for the Democratic Party. Remember when Trump, during the campaign, you know, would try to capture more of the black vote and says, look, you guys, give me a chance. You've been, as a group, statistically, overwhelmingly giving your support to the Democrats. What have they done to you? What have they done for you? Think about that. So if at the end of, well, it's only, it won't be at the end of his 4 years, but it will be by 2020, by Election Day in November of 2020, it'll come down to what is written in some book, what are attributed statements to Trump in some tell-all book is not going to matter a hill of beans when compared to how people are doing. And if people can say, you know what, I think he's a bozo, but guess what? I'm doing a heck of a lot better now than I was 4 years ago. And that is going to win people over that did not vote for him 4 years prior. And I'm going to tell you right now, we're not going to be facing a nuclear holocaust. And that's going to be part of the story, too. Because for all the one thing that will be for certain is it'll be 4 years. And a lot of the things that the left said would happen, like Trump Russia, the smoking gun, and a nuclear holocaust and fallout with North Korea, World War III, et cetera, et cetera. All of these preposterous claims that have been made and repeated and believed by so many. What's a great way to refute that? Didn't happen. So, you know, I always say this. I don't want to help the opposition here. But I know you listen to my show, so I'm left with no choice but to tell you what I think could really be a turning point if somebody really seriously wants to fight Trump. You got to move away from you cannot believe the caricature. If you believe the caricature of Trump as an imbecilic child, as a semi mentally deranged fool, you're going to get outwitted by him. See, it's like you're competing. Yeah, you think you're competing in the Special Olympics, but he's the ringer, right? He's the guy who's fully able bodied, and he's literally gonna kill you, competitively speaking. Yeah, no, Sessions, just to finish that point here, Sessions being on thin ice, I agree with. I think so. And I think that the action that you're seeing and these press releases, because that you're seeing about moving forward on the Clinton investigation, moving forward on immigration, moving forward perhaps on this marijuana issue, are all ways that Sessions is trying to show that he is still active and in control. Because the recusal, by the way, the recusal is not a one-time thing. He has recused himself from all things related to Mueller, all things related to Trump Russia, which means that as the executive in charge of the Justice Department, as the nation's top cop, he has no control, no authority, and can give no direction to ostensibly the most important work that is being handled by the department. And that is absurd, especially when you consider that his recusal all has to do with him meeting with an ambassador that every senator at the time met with. It's like the whole thing is nonsense. But I'm always trying to connect the dots here for you and understand the broader context of what is going on. And there's a lot of good news out there, friends, I promise you. All right, don't go anywhere. I'm going to talk about this marijuana thing here, California, and why I think there's talk of this right now. Interesting stuff. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Hola, amigos. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC, Friday night, almost to 8:30. U.S. News and World Report, which I thought it was a defunct magazine, but apparently they still publish something online. They also do law school rankings. That's probably their number one moneymaker out there, ranking colleges, different programs. Well, anyway, U.S. News and World Report is reporting on the great state of Utah, the Utah state senatorial election to fill the place of one Orrin Hatch. Now, you know that the purported frontrunner who has not announced anything yet is none other than Mitt Romney. And the U.S. News and World Report has an article that opines, is Mitt the next McCain? Yeah, I can answer that. He is. Of course he is. We know that. That's why we tepidly and unenthusiastically went to the polls and held our noses and voted for the fool because, well, what, that or vote for Obama? I know. Robbie's in there shaking his head. He voted for like Scrooge McDuck or somebody else. I don't want to hear it. I know. Oh, yeah, I know. You're libertarian people. Anyway, I decided to vote for the real candidate that had a chance of winning. And yes, that's what I do in elections. Huh? McCain. Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's just it. They both ran against Obama and they both lost. These are two peas in the same pod. But U.S. News and World Report has a completely different opinion about it. Their opinion is not my opinion, that they are both establishment Republican losers whose ship has sailed. It's sailed and sunk. No, their whole thing is that Romney admires McCain because McCain is mavericky. He likes the McCain-Maverick way. And he sees himself as a sort of a McCain replacement in the Senate. Because as you know, McCain has a brain tumor. Things are not looking good. And I don't want to sound too enthusiastic about that, but he's just not going to be with us much longer. Sooner or later, the man will retire. And Mitt is going to come in and be the new McCain. And the establishment media, the mainstream media, the leftists are all rejoicing about this idea. Yes, somebody needs to pick up the mantle. This is exactly it. I always tell you, liberals want loser Republicans. If you hear the mainstream media be enthusiastic about a Republican, run for the hills away from that Republican. Because they're basically setting up a Trojan horse. This is why they... No, it's exactly true. Now, Mitt Romney, I know, is a glorious man. Very good friends with his son and daughter-in-law. They're good people. But politically, I don't want him anywhere near the Capitol. There's a question, why doesn't he run again and fill McCain's spot if he loves McCain so much? That's a good question. I'll explain it. The good people of... You know the term carpetbagger? Familiar with this term, it was, you know, during the Reconstruction era in the South, a bunch of Northerners moved in and they all had carpet bags, bags made out of carpet. And they weren't from the South, but they filled various positions because that was how Reconstruction worked. Anyway, we had here a guy who was a governor in Massachusetts, lived in Massachusetts, an East Coast guy, not a Utah guy. Now, Mitt has a house in Utah and has had homes in Park City, Deer Valley. So but that's not really even Utah. Let's be honest. But the one asset that he has in Utah is that he's a Mormon, and religious affinity, religious identification in Utah, in some respects, is greater than statehood identification and affinity. So I think he can get away as a carpetbagging candidate in Utah far better than he can get away with it in a state like Arizona. And the other thing is, I think the people in Arizona have their teeth full of Flake and McCain. They're traitors on immigration. That is a huge issue down there. So I think this is very calculated. This is the one state where he has it in the bag, so to speak. And now I can tell you that it's not just the bag, it's the carpet bag. Don't go anywhere. We got the news up next with John Wolfe. I'll be back right after this.
I got a dial tone.
If you'd like to make a call,
dial 800-222-5222, because the KABC phone lines are open.
Welcome back, Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Now, I actually think that a lot of this sort of anti-Trump silliness, this unbelievable, shrill hysteria that is just unbelievable, that's what you can say about it, is going to have an opposite effect. And that is that there are a lot of people out there who may not be the biggest Trump fans, but are going to start to say, come on, get a grip. This just doesn't compute. And we talked a little bit about this last hour. Well, one of those people today, of all people to surface in defense of Trump, but not even in defense of Trump, to explain this very phenomena that I'm talking about, perhaps even to foreshadow it, is Meghan McCain. Now, Meghan McCain, daughter of Senator McCain, is a prolific anti-Trumpist. She was a never Trump Republican. I remember during the convention in Cleveland, she was set up on Radio Row next to our booth, kind of across the way. She and her whole entourage. Boy, Meghan McCain thinks she's important. I'm going to tell you this. And there were all these women around her. It was like this little cackle of and I know, and the whole time she sat there with the most sour face. You know, and I'm a Trump guy, was then, am now. And so I knew how much she loathed Trump and how a dedicated anti-Trump she was. And she just sat there the whole time doing her show, and she's bitter and, well, listen to her. You know, she's on The View now. And there, and she basically, was this today? Today, she says, you know, you guys, you're actually making me like Trump. Listen to this.
I was a never Trumper. I was someone who have a lot of grave questions about President Trump.
Right.
But after the election, I choose to try and understand his base and why they're so angry and why they're still sticking with him. He has the same approval rate on the election day that he does now. I've never felt more defensive of Trump's base. I've never felt more conservative, and I've never felt more defensive of the middle of the country than I have since I started working on this show. I don't mean that in a negative way. I just have a whole new understanding of what it feels like to sort of be lectured to about our values.
Now, if you're wondering what she's talking about, because by the way, she's spot on, and I think what she's saying is genuine. You should have seen her how she was interacting. These are genuine feelings. She's pissed. You just have to go back to Tuesday to The View. Now, I know you do not watch The View because, well, you have a brain, but don't worry. We here on the program have assigned producer Robbie to follow The View. And so as part of his, he doesn't get hazard pay for it. But it could result in a workers' compensation claim. That is possible. Joy, Behar? Compare Trump to Iran, and Meghan McCain gets into it with her. Listen to this exchange. This happened on Tuesday.
For me, when we have these conversations, somehow comparing the United States to Iran, that's where I end conversations and where I just leave, because
we're
I think
it's
ridiculous.
It's
but
not
he just
like
said we need to rise up against
like,
Trump in the same way like Ayatollah Khomeini is somehow morally relative to President Trump. I think that's right.
It's not apples and apples. It's not equal. Mm-hmm. But we're on a very slippery slope in this country toward throwing democracy out the window every single day.
We have to defend the freedom of the press and civil rights here.
Mm-hmm. We do, but we're not being stoned in the street for being gay.
Not yet.
They're completely
Meghan McCain says, we do, we have to defend civil rights, but we don't stone people in the street for being gay. And Anna Navarro, Behar, Whoopi Goldberg, they all chime in, not yet. See, this is where these clowns, I believe that Navarro, Behar, Whoopi, they all actually believe that. And it's Yeah, it's, you know, we're gonna go from Trump, you know, cutting taxes to stoning gay people. It's a perfectly logical leap if your brain is the size of a peanut and you're a liberal. Oftentimes one and the same. All right. No, this ties in broadly with what I'm saying. I'll explain it. It all fits in. The pieces all fit together. And you listen to the program, so you'll be able to make the connections. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News, talk, evolve. 790 KBC.
Sam Rogowski here for my friend, my lawyer, my attorney, my defender, my champion, Sweet James Bergner. Now, this is the one and only firm you need to call if you've been in an accident, you've been injured, you've been hurt. And you need to get somebody to help you out and pay for it, right? That's the idea. And that's how the system works. And you don't want to do it alone. It's not a do-it-yourself project. Don't be fooled. You might be good with people and all that, but you don't know the law and you don't know all the tricks needed to get you the kind of result that you deserve. Go to the pros. Go to the people that know what they're doing. Sweet James and his team, they have it dialed. They know what they're doing. Over $400 million collected for their clients. These guys, look, and they're compassionate. They're friendly. And they'll help you, I'll guide you through it and make you feel good too. All that is important. Call consultations are free. Give them a call, 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021. You don't pay anything until they resolve your case. So give them a call. Keep this number handy for yourself or a loved one or a friend, 800-881-2021, or visit sweetjames.com. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation live on Talk Radio 790 KABC, almost to 9 o'clock here. I promised to talk about marijuana. So, I know nothing about marijuana. I have never smoked marijuana. I've never eaten marijuana. I've never injected marijuana. I've never had a marijuana enema. I have done nothing with marijuana whatsoever. It wasn't until maybe a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, that I first learned what the smell of marijuana. I'm just telling you, I am naive when it comes to all recreational drugs. That said, marijuana should be legal. Philip Morris ought to be selling it. Forget vaping. They ought to be selling marijuana, okay? It ought to be regulated, distributed, sold, taxed, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I know that a number of prominent Trump supporters right now are aghast, especially libertarians, are aghast that Sessions is rescinding, or he's over. Basically, there are three memos that were put out by the Obama Justice Department that turned a blind eye or basically said that the federal government wasn't going to prosecute marijuana crimes. And it outlined what they were, you know, possession, distributions and such. And it left it up to the states to set their laws and restrictions. Now, I like that, of course, in principle. But again, I mentioned earlier that Obama didn't work with Congress because he didn't like to get along with Congress and he didn't like to work the phones and get his hands dirty. He was above it. So consequently, the laws were never changed. So federal law currently prohibits marijuana and state law allows it. And we know in California, as of the first, you can buy marijuana recreationally. You don't need a medical license. So I'm at the gym the other day. And there's this kind of meathead trainer in there and he's talking to they're working out and they're talking about pot, which I think is hilarious. Right. So, pot is not a performance booster. I understand that much. So they're talking about pop, and this guy's saying, my CFO friend, you know, he's running this facility and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm listening to, pot's legal. It's legal. And I'm listening to it. I'm going, it's not. Because literally the Trump administration can declare it illegal, can just say, look, we're wiping away what Obama did, and we're back to the laws that are on the books. Now, I will tell you what I would do if I were Trump. And I would do exactly what he's doing. And I'll tell you why. Because what he's doing, what they're doing is they're basically leaving it up to the U.S. attorneys in the various districts. So think of it like the representatives of the Department of Justice in each individual state to see how they're going to enforce the law. And I think that this is a giant broadside, maybe even a bargaining chip in dealing with California on illegal immigration. I'm going to explain this. This is, well, you want to tease? It's all to do with money. Okay, I'll get into it right after the break. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. All right, so we have this threat from the Trump Department of Justice. The Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, has no grounds to recuse himself from marijuana. So he is in charge, and he has wiped away the Obama-era memos, clearing the way for the enforcement of existing federal law, which prohibits the possession, sale, manufacture of marijuana. Now, I mentioned earlier, I am all for, I would legalize all drugs if I had a pick between what we have now and you know, where we ought to be. Okay, I lean toward legalization. But I will tell you this. Here, I think I kind of understand what it is, because already the U.S. attorney for Colorado has said that they're going to stick to the status quo, that they're going to basically follow the Obama era rules. But Trump could instruct the U.S. attorney in California to treat us differently. And I see it as it's a bargaining chip. Let me explain. Right now, it's no mystery. Our state is in the financial crapper, okay? I mean, you know, Governor Brown shaking us, turning us upside down, shaking our pockets out, you know, the gas tax going up and registration's going up. Everything's going up. Every place that the government here in the state can grab some cash, they're doing it. The Trump tax plan that does away with the state and local tax exemptions is going to be a bad effect on tax receipts in the state. Because the few individuals that pay in the most money are also the most mobile, and many of them will leave, well, officially at least, for Nevada, Texas, Arizona and the like. All right. So with tax revenue going down, what is California? And again, I don't have this from anywhere. This is just what I would do if I were Trump, which makes me think maybe Trump's like 10 steps ahead of me. And that is what? With revenue going down, California, I promise you, is banking on pot revenue. By bringing it mainstream and having, I was mentioning that guy talking about the CFO. Now it's big business, right? Now it's legitimate, and people are making loans and investing in it. And there's serious, you know, business people, not just potheads, going into this trade. And that is going to result in revenue for California. Now, the background of all this, what's going on? We've become a sanctuary state. Does Trump like that? No. This may be one way that Trump and the Trump administration is able to coerce California into doing what it wants. They may say explicitly or, you know, sort of, I don't know, cryptically, they can say to California, look, yeah, well, you know, maybe we'll have the U.S. attorney, you know, go back to the Obama way of doing things. And but you know what? Hell, you know, as Congress sets the law, I'm just the president. I'm here to enforce it. I don't write the laws. I'm just, you know, the Department of Justice is going to enforce it. And all it would take is the threat of a shutdown of one or two big facilities. And money investment in this is going to run. So I, you know, this is, we're going to watch this and see how it plays out. But that's some of the dynamic going on behind the scenes. All right, we're going to be back on Monday at 7 p.m. So have a great weekend. Enjoy. So grateful for all of you. Always happy to have you here. And we got a big week ahead. Looking forward. Enjoy your weekends.